Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9. Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. Text number 7. Asto siddharim ekagra manasa susamahitaha prema gadgadaya vacha tanyasta ridayekshana. Astosit. He began to offer prayers. Harim, under the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ekagra Manasa. The mind being completely fixed upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Susamahita, very attentive, without diversion to any other subject. Prema gagadaya, faltering because of feeling transcendental bliss. Vacha, with a voice. Tat nyasta, being fully dedicated to him, Lord Nrsimhadev. Hridaya ikshana, with heart and sight. Why is sight mentioned here? What's that? Well, that makes a lot of sense. Well, why heart and sight? Yeah, there's always, generally speaking, there's always two things. There's the mind and the intelligence. The mind is the heart, and the intelligence is are what we say. We say according to what we see. So our vision is actually a product of our intelligence. So if we see things properly, then that's a sign of intelligence. Perspective. We have the proper perspective. Utkramantam sitim vapi bunjana vagunanvita vimudo nana pashanti pashanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish, they cannot understand how the living entity quits his body or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature, but those whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly. So how we see things, it depends upon our intelligence, and how our intelligence depends upon what we're hearing and how much we're hearing it. And there's a connection between the heart and the intelligence, the mind and the intelligence. What's the connection? Does anyone have enough intelligence to know what the connection is? Is it possible to have clear intelligence without clear heart? Well, that was a yes. Why? On the test, if yes, no question, you might get it right. But why? It is an essay question. Why can't you have a clear intelligence if you don't have a clear mind? Wow. Hello out there. I mean, we're walking around with mind intelligence. Anyone ever notice when our intelligence, when our minds are dwelling on other things, that we lose our intelligence? Anyone ever notice that? No. Indriyani manobudhir. Indriyani charitam yan mano nu vidyate tadasya harati pragya vayor navam ivambasi. Just like a boat on the water can be swept away by a strong wind, so even one of the roaming senses in which the mind becomes fixed can carry away a man's intelligence. So what kind of intelligence? It seems like when people get their minds fixed on sense gratification, they get more intelligence. More intelligence how to gratify their senses. So what does it mean to carry away man's intelligence? Good guess. Great. 2 points. Out of five. Indriyani hucharita. Nashti buddhiya yuktasya na cha yuktasya bhavanaha na cha bhavyantak shantira ashantaksya kutak sukham. Nashti buddhi yukta, one who's intelligent, let's try to do it by the Sanskrit. Nashti buddhiya yuktasya, one whose mind is not fixed in transcendence, can have neither the controlled mind nor a steady intelligence, without which there is no possibility of peace, and how can there be any happiness without peace? As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roaming senses in which the mind becomes fixed can carry away a man's intelligence. So, nasti buddhi ayuktasya. Ayuktasya means what? What is yukta? With what? With how? Devotional service. Ayukta means to be connected with Krishna. Well, generally the connection is through devotional service. Let's go back a few verses there. Prasade savardukanam hayarasya pujayate prasadam chetaso yasu buddhi paryabhavtishtate. One who is thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness can have the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer. In such satisfied state, one's intelligence becomes steady. It's in your book there? Oh, yeah? Oh, it's a pretty magical book. It has everything. That's considered an important verse? Oh, yeah? Did I get the translation right? Yeah. There's different translations. I generally have the old translation. So, one's intelligence becomes steady. Why does the intelligence become steady? We have this abstract idea of what we're talking, philosophy. We have this real abstract, philosophy is just kind of like some mental game we play around with. It's nothing to do with reality, it's just some words we banter about. And some, we take a test and we get the right words. All right, you made it. Still in Maya, but you got the test. You got 100 on the test. Although you're 100% in Maya. We have this disconnect between philosophy and reality. So how has the intelligence become steady? I just read the verse. Why has the intelligence become steady? I have these mechanical answers too. Prasade savardukhanam hariyarsya prajayate prasadam chetaso yasu buddhi paryabhavtishtate. What does that word, prasad, mean? Peaceful. No, it doesn't. Shanti is peaceful. Happy. Yes, satisfied. Yeah, we get a higher pleasure. In other words, when we are actually experiencing, when we find something that gives us a higher pleasure, then the intelligence becomes fixed on it. If you're looking around and for something to make you happy, and you try it out and you get a stomach ache, the other one, you get a broken finger, and finally, you get some Mahaprasad, and you're in bliss. So next time you look around, what are you going to do? Use your intelligence to do what? Find the thing that gave you stomachache or broke your finger. What are you going to do? Look around for the thing that gave you bliss before. Isn't that right? So that's intelligence. Intelligence gives us the vision. This will make you happy. This will not make you happy. And when we find something that actually makes us happy, then we go for it again. According to the mode of nature we're in, of course, but transcendental. Prasade sarvadukkhanam. And what's the verse before prasade sarvadukkhanam? Does anyone know? Raga, dvesha, vimuktai, stu, vishyan, indriyastran, atma vaisharavade, atma prasadam, adigachati. One who's thus situated in, what is that? And able to control his senses through regular principles of freedom, can obtain the full mercy of the Lord. So how does he get the full mercy of the Lord? Well, let's read the purport, because we may miss the purport if we don't. Yeah. Purport. The word susamahita means very attentive or fully fixed. The ability to fix the mind in this way is a result of yoga siddhi. Mystic perfection. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.1, dhyanavastita tatkatena manasa pachantiyam yoginaha. One obtains yoga perfection when he is freed from all material diversions and his mind is fixed upon the lotus feet of the Lord. This is called samadhi or trance. Prahlad Maharaj attained that stage beyond the senses because he was engaged in service. He felt transcendentally situated, and naturally his mind and attention became saturated in transcendence. That condition, he began to offer his prayers as follows. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskyatyade Siddharane. So generally speaking, in the material world, those who are not in Krishna consciousness must be looking around in the material world for objects of the senses to enjoy, because that's our nature. We want to enjoy. We got to do something, so we're trying to do something that will make us happy. Very few people look around for things to make them miserable, because it's not necessary. We're already miserable. We don't have to find something to make us more miserable. So everyone's looking for that object, and the possibility is we could fix our attention upon Krishna, but we believe that there are things in the material world that will make us happy. Especially the main thing that, according to Prahlad Maharaj, because he'll tell us in his prayers, Yanmaitu Naidi Grihamedi Sukham Hitucham. The main thing that we believe, the fundamental principle that we believe that will make us happy is if I can become Radha or Krishna. In other words, the fundamental principle of material happiness is Grihamedi Sukham. This happiness of conjugal love. And then in order to add to conjugal love, we have the house, the paraphernalia, we even have our dog and the servants and everything, just to fill in, to make it more romantic. And then there are the pastimes of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, to make it even more romantic. But that's material existence. And we believe that some part of that, or the whole part of it, can actually make me happy. As I pointed out, there was one commercial for some water. And there's a cowboy, and he's riding along, and he hears, help, help. Did you ever see that commercial? Yeah, I mentioned it once. Help, help. And then he looks over, and he sees this beautiful lady hanging on a tree branch, you know, over a mountain over a cliff. And she's hanging on, help, help. He says, don't worry, you know, and he runs to the horse, gets his rope to rescue her, drinks some water. And the water has a reputation, clear your mind. So his mind becomes clear. And then he sees, he has a vision. He saves a lady, and they get married, and they have these children, and he's sitting there with a bottle and feeding this little child the bottle, and his mother-in-law comes in with her curlers in her hair. And he thinks, wow, no way. Takes a rope, puts it back in the horse, gallops away. It's supposed to be funny. Some brahmachari must have made the commercial. So, the idea is that that's the main impediment, and that's what distracts us. Now, if we don't think we're distracted by those things, it means that we're completely distracted. We don't even know the difference between distraction and attention anymore. But when one tries to become Krishna conscious, then one fixes the mind upon Krishna, tries to, and then the mind says, wait a second, she actually loves you. Why are you so ungrateful? You left her behind. Go back, get the rope, and save her. Or so many other things, you know. The dog is crying for you, or whatever. There's some distraction in the material world that doesn't allow us to steadily think about Krishna. And therefore, if one can get some higher taste, vishaya vinivartante, nirharasidehinam, rasa varjam rasopyasya param drishva nivartate. In other words, if we can actually fix our attention upon Krishna, that's a good beginning, but then we actually have to give our love for Krishna. Kamsa also fixes attention upon Krishna to an extent that we can't even imagine. But there is no love for Krishna, there is only hatred. But if we can fix our minds upon Krishna and have the proper attitude of appreciation, or what to speak of the attitude of remembering Krishna's servants and how they had an attitude of service, trying to please Krishna. Or try to invoke within our heart some attitude of trying to please Krishna from somewhere deep in our heart. Where is it? Okay. It's there somewhere, I know. Where is it? Somewhere in my heart there's some desire to please Krishna, whoever he might be. Usually it's easier to see a good example of someone's trying to please Krishna and at least think that they're trying to please Krishna and then to think I should have that same mood. Then the result is Krishna reveals himself to us. And we get a higher taste. We get some, Krishna reveals what it's actually like to be Krishna conscious. That we can experience Krishna with our transcendental senses. Believe it or not, we're experiencing everything right now with our transcendental senses, but contaminated or through the mundane senses and mind. Therefore, we're not experiencing things as they are. We're experiencing things as the modes of material nature are allowing us to. But if we perform devotional service, then Krishna may directly give some little taste of him and purity of existence, and the result is that one feels transcendental bliss and maybe a little bit of something called love, whatever it might be. Then that higher taste will give one some satisfaction, that there is some purpose of life, there is some goal, there is something I can achieve that will actually make me happy forever. Krishna consciousness is not just like some idea, some theory, some philosophy that they talk about in class and don't know what they're talking about, but it sounds good. But we can actually experience it, and then it becomes, it's the impetus to go on. And then, nasti buddhya yuktasya na tya yuktasya bhavana. That one who's not in Krishna consciousness can have neither controlled mind nor steady intelligence, without which there can be no possibility of peace, and how can there be any happiness without peace? So why is our mind not controlled? Because we don't really believe Krishna is the proprietor of everything. And therefore, Maya takes our intelligence away. We don't really believe that everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. So therefore, Maya takes our intelligence away. We don't believe that actually my best friend is Krishna, and I should follow strictly what he tells me, because whatever he tells me is ultimately for my benefit, and everything else is a waste of time. We don't believe that thing, so Maya takes our intelligence away. And because Maya takes our intelligence away, we're in Maya, and we are not satisfied. We're not peaceful. We're afraid. I'm this body. I'm going to die soon. You know, who knows where I'm going? You know, I'll leave this body. Even if I am eternal, I'll go somewhere. I'll forget who I am. Start all over again with another identity. And forget all about who I was in this lifetime. And therefore, it's as good as being dead. Because I won't exist anymore. Because we're so enamored with our present personality that we actually believe it's us. And if my present personality disappears, then I disappear. We don't see ourselves as the person behind the personality who's experiencing it. We think, this is my personality. And therefore, when I start again, I don't start again. I get a different personality, and that personality is a different person. Although we have experience, hopefully, we have enough remembrance. If we can remember when we were a little baby, of course, maybe that's a little difficult. Or we can remember, say, when we were 5 years old. Probably we weren't that much different when we were five than we are now. Our methodology of choosing things might have been a little different. But basically, it was all... I remember one time I was in a restaurant with my mother, and I wanted to get some, what was called knish. Knish is like kachori with potato in it. I was eating potatoes at that time. I was young and experienced. I was like 5 years old. And my mother said, "Do you want one of those?" I said, "No," because, you know, just to show I'm independent. And then I thought, well, actually, I do want one. So I said, "Actually, I want one." And my mother looked at me and said, "Actually, it's only because today is your birthday that I'll get you one." She was probably pretty frustrated with me. Trying to exert my independence. Anyhow, I got it. Happy ending. But it was potatoes. Probably it was better if I wouldn't have gotten it. So, I mean, I was basically the same person. I was more spontaneous in my display of my independence. And I didn't think so carefully about what I wanted or not. Anyhow, we're behind this material personality, we actually have a spiritual identity. But we're just kind of like a little bit in anesthesia. You know what anesthesia is? Do you know what anesthesia is? What's that? Yeah. But they used to, before they had this injections, when they give you had an operation, when I had my tonsils, they give you gas. Did you ever have gas for anesthesia? You kind of like, ooh. You kind of like go into the background. And, ooh. Twilight Zone. So So presently we're in the twilight zone. The soul is in the twilight zone. He's kind of there, but he's not really there so much. He's just, you know, watching this virtual reality go on. He actually believes he's part of it. And he's experiencing, we're experiencing the happiness and distress of our mind and our body. We're experiencing the doubts and the delusions of our intelligence. I mean, it's a real good virtual reality. Krishna's expert. You can't get better. The scientists may try, but they'll never get even a fraction of what Krishna is able to put us into. So, somehow or another, we get the idea I should think about Krishna. Then we make a little progress. Like in kirtan, you know, perfect place to space out and to think we're doing great. I'm here. I'm such a good person. I'm a good devotee because I'm here. All these other rascal devotees, you know, outside who are supposed to be here, they never come because they're actually potential demons. They might even be demons for all I know. Or they're just bad devotees. But I'm a good devotee because I'm here thinking about how good I am. I'm not being proud. I'm just being honest. So we're here, but we're not really here. We're still living in our imagination, even during the kirtan. It's not all the energy of the Lord, all the Supreme Lord, I'm fallen, kindly pick me up. No, I'm here. I made it. Look at me, all right. We're together, the Panchatattva and me. Move over, Shivas. Make room. No, the real attitude is, my God, I really need some mercy here. Please, you know, let me absorb my mind in the holy name. Even listen to the person who's chanting. Or even try to listen to myself chanting and make sure I'm really chanting. Not that my mind is on autopilot. I'm thinking about a million things. And I'm doing something called, like, it's almost like the words. I'm not really so sure what they are. Something's coming out, I'm sure. No, we should actually hear the devotee who's chanting. We should hear ourselves chanting, too. And we should try to appreciate who's chanting, they're chanting. And we should try to chant sincerely. That's called attention. What to speak of kirtan, even japa, which is a real, usually the bigger struggle that we can have, the biggest challenge, but the biggest challenge can give the greatest reward. If we actually try to pay attention during japa and try to purify, you could say, or modify, or chant in such a way that we actually have some meaning to what we're doing. It's not like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. And we're listening to it, yeah, I really got to get these rounds done. Hare Ram, right? It's going. Victory, all right, another round done. True. I feel so good. This torture of 16 rounds. To actually try to chant, and then Maya is saying, it doesn't work. See, you're chanting so nicely, and he's not revealing himself. It makes no difference. Just go to sleep. Just get your rounds done. It's not going to work. Doesn't matter how sincere you are. Krishna doesn't care. He's not listening. You're chanting in the wilderness, crying out in the wilderness. Oh, it has to become convinced Krishna does care, but he's not so cheap. Hare Krishna. Yes, I'm here. We have to have the chance. Krishna wants to make sure that we're trying to be sincere and that he doesn't reveal himself so easily that we think I just snap my finger and Krishna comes dancing before me. No, we try, and when Krishna sees that we're trying, then he'll, according to his judgment, he'll reciprocate with us accordingly. But for one who's actually trying hard, then he can't help but remember Krishna eventually. Because we've got to remember something, we're really trying hard, then we'll remember Krishna naturally. And if we don't remember Krishna immediately, then that's very good, because then we'll try harder and harder, and eventually when we do remember Krishna, we'll actually appreciate him a lot more than if he came so easily. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj is put into so many difficulties, but that was good because he became really, he developed the character of a Shuddha Bhakta, a completely pure devotee, undisturbed by the material nature. So that's the test of actually spiritual advancement. One is undisturbed in spite of the greatest difficulties. It's Bhagavad Gita. Tolerance. In other words, the pathway to perfection is through tolerance. We don't learn anything else. Try to chant Hare Krishna and at the same time tolerate. And the hardest thing to tolerate is what? What is the hardest thing to tolerate? What's that?
Mind.
Whose mind? Yes, our mind is the hardest, most difficult thing to tolerate. Brahma reached perfection not by distributing a lot of books. Wasn't he was on the lotus flower and he was doing, telephone saying book distribution. I made it, so many books. 3 sets went out today. No, it's all right. If he could have done it, he probably would have done it, but there was no telephone. There was no internet at the time. And there, matter of fact, there was no one else to sell a set to. So he had to make do. And how did he achieve perfection? He put his mind upon Krishna in trance. And Krishna revealed the spiritual world to him because he was sincere. He actually was trying to understand Krishna and service to Krishna. Tapa. What does tapa mean? What's the connection between austerity and heat? When you're really austere, then you can build a little fire and get warm. Man, that feels really good. It's really cold out there. I feel a little heat. What's the connection between austerity and heat? What do we do? You ever hear "get into the fire"? I'm in the fire. Do they ever use that expression here? Fire book distribution. Ecstatic by tapasya, then that's the gateway to purity and remembrance. From vanaprastha, which is tapa, comes abhayam sattva samshudhir jnana yoga vyasiti. When Krishna reveals himself, then one becomes fearless, there's purity, and there's transcendental realization, knowledge. So when the mind is no longer distracted by material dualities, then one can solely meditate upon Krishna, and then one gets into the fire, ecstatic love of devotional service. So Prahlad Maharaj, the more he was tortured, the more he took shelter of Krishna, the more he became ecstatic, as we'll find in one of the next verses. Naiva dvije paradharatya vartiranyasta virya vayana mahamrita magna chitak soche vimukha chetasa indriyaratan maya sukhayam bharam udvato vimudan. You know that verse, Ananta? Naiva dvije paradharatya vartiranyasta. That's one of the most famous verses which we'll come to. That naiva dvije paradharatya. So Lord Nrisimhadeva was offering Prahlad benedictions. And Prahlad Maharaj said, no, I don't need a benediction because as soon as I chant your holy name, my mind merges into an ocean of transcendental bliss and I become overwhelmed with happiness. And then Prabhupada said, but you look like you're a little morose, Prahlad, you know. Why are you claiming to be so happy? He said, actually I'm morose because I'm thinking of these fools and rascals who created this humbug. Prabhupada said humbug, which you probably don't know what that means. In fact, no one in English would know what it means either. Humbug is a very old English expression for humbug. It's ridiculous, foolish, for this humbug civilization where people are working hard for happiness and all they're finding is misery, vimuda. They're super fools. They're working hard for happiness, and they're just getting the opposite. So I'm lamenting, and I'm trying hard to deliver them. So that's the only lamentation of Krishna and his devotees, that people are wasting their time where they could be happy. And the spiritual world means everyone's trying to make each other happy. So when the devotee comes here, then he tries to make the people here happy by giving them Krishna consciousness. Which is what they do in the spiritual world too, by the way. So there's no real difference. What we do here, trying to give people Krishna consciousness, in the spiritual world, we do the same thing, but people are probably a little more receptive to Krishna consciousness in the spiritual world than they are here. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Looks like you almost have a question, Ananta.
Sorry?
It looks like you almost had a question.
Almost, yeah. It's confusing.
What's that?
I'm still
confusing. Crunching the numbers. The summary of the class is, if we actually focus, if we actually believe that if I serve Krishna, which is the methodology of becoming conscious of him through the process of service, accepting that everything belongs to Krishna, and then finding out how to utilize things for Krishna's service through his representatives, Guru, Sadhana, and Shastra, and then doing things to please Krishna, then Krishna reveals himself. And when Krishna reveals himself, we get the higher taste, then all the other things we were hankering for and lamenting about go away, and we become fixed in consciousness. And then our life gradually becomes perfect. Of course, it usually happens, we get fixed in consciousness, and the next moment Maya will remind us of something else that we were thinking about. We become a little proud, thinking, yeah, I made it. And then Maya will say, oh, yeah? Well, here, what about this? And you go, yeah, what about that? And now that you reminded me. And we get back to attachment aversion again. Until we finally realize, yeah, what am I wasting my time? I got to fix my mind again on Krishna. Could take a moment, could take years before we remember again. Yes.
Okay, Hare Krishna. Maharshi were mentioning this dynamics between intelligence and mind. Yeah. I also mentioned this perspective. What is this perspective? This is function of intelligence, or?
Yeah, of course, without intelligence. Intelligence means to see the same way that Krishna sees things. Remember? To see how Krishna sees things, to see what the order, the priorities that Krishna sees things, how things are interrelated with each other. So this is called perspective, which is a development of intelligence. It's taking the knowledge and assimilating it, and then seeing the way Krishna sees things.
What are the functions of intelligence?
Well, you can look it up in the Bhagavatam. One of them is doubt. One of them is seeing things in the right perspective. One of them is memory.
One is sleep.
No, it didn't say sleep.
Sleep.
Sleep helps develop our intelligence. It feeds our intelligence. Sleep is the food for intelligence. Intelligence. No, doubt, it says.
No. Doubt also, samsara, yes.
But that sleep is not a function of intelligence. Sleep is the food for intelligence. You can look it up. Otherwise, there would be a lot of super intelligent people around.
No, without sleep, doesn't function, no?
Yeah, it's a food for intelligence. The intelligence can't function without sleep. It needs some rest. That's the which canto, third canto.
3:26:29.
Yeah,
Swapa, and it's there.
What's that?
Doubt, misapprehensions, correct apprehension, memory, and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristic of intelligence. The function of intelligence is pramana, vipadaya, vipadaya, pramana. Okay.
What's that?
Well, that was
the function of intelligence. What does it say in the purport about sleep?
Let's see. Mm-hmm. I remember this is the most this sleep. That's why. Mm-hmm. Just 1 second to go to the slow.
Because without sleep, the intelligence can't function.
Yes.
Just like doubt, intelligence is necessary to have doubt because at first we don't understand things. So we don't use our intelligence, we want to understand. So these are functions of intelligence. Is there a purport?
About the sleep. Smriti means memory and svapa means sleep. Sleep is also necessary to keep the intelligence in working order.
That's what I said.
But in the shloka is the swap.
We have to understand what it's talking about. Anyhow, we have to think about it. But sleep is not, it's not that the more you sleep, the more intelligent you get.
Not in that sense, no.
But sleep is necessary for the intelligence to function. Otherwise it won't function. And the intelligence, at least it says in the purport, unless you have enough intelligence, you won't be able to doubt. Unless you doubt, you won't be able to find out what the real thing is, what the actual conclusion is. Because if you don't doubt, then the wrong things, you may accept the wrong thing. So it's talking about functions of intelligence. But anyhow, it's another thing. But real intelligence is to see things in the proper perspective.
Yeah.
That's Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter. That 13th chapter? No, that's
18 also, no?
What's that?
18, in three modes.
No, but there's a, And the intelligence means to see things in the proper buddhi. That's chapter 10, text number 5. Way my Bhagavad Gita, so I guess. 10.5. Pūrya jñāna samudho śrema sattvam tamāśama sukadu kam samo bhavo bhavo vayam chabayam evacha. You have that?
You don't have Bhagavad Gita there?
You don't have Bhagavad Gita on your computer?
10.5 you mentioned?
10.5. 50% of your life is wasted. Your computer is wasted.
We agree. But better have 50 than nothing. Yes.
Five.
This is
10.5. I'll read it 10. So, Buddhya Gyanam, so, intelligence refers to the power to analyze things in the proper perspective.
Mm.
And knowledge refers to understanding what is spirit and what is matter. So, here we have, for us, the difference between knowledge and perspective. Perspective. Intelligence means to see things in the proper perspective, to be able to assimilate all this different knowledge and see it properly.
Is there which word in Sanskrit is perspective?
Ukramantam sivitim vapi bhunjanava gunambita vivuranana pashanti kyana chakshush pashanti kyana. Pashanti means to see, Pashanti jnana, or jnana chakshush, to see with the eyes of knowledge.
Mm.
That's
what is that? Pashanti chakshush.
Jnana, Pashyanti Jnana.
That's the 15th chapter.
Oh, 59, that one.
No, no.
This is the
last verse.
This is Jnana Chakshu.
Jnana Chakshu. We have Shastra Chakshush and Jnana Chakshush.
Mm.
So we have 13, last verse in the 13th chapter. Last verse of the 13th chapter, which is Kshetra Kshetraya Evam Antara Jnana Chakshusha. Those who see with the eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the knower of the body can also understand the process of liberation, bondage of material nature attained to the supreme goal. So Jnana Chakshusha, by the vision of knowledge.
That's perfect. That's perspective.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Graduation on Bhagavatam Ki Jai.